Do you ever get one of those calls? Maybe your smartphone sort of pops up that you're getting a call from a certain someone or your caller ID, and you know that the news isn't likely to be good news. I had one of those calls on Wednesday. The sort of person's name that popped up is sort of complicated. It's a family that I knew very well when I was growing up. I knew them through church. I knew the whole family, you know, the parents, and they had children who are about my age, a girl, Beth, who's just a year older than I am, and a couple of sons who are younger, and I was friends with all of them, and I knew the family. There were many sleepovers at their house, that sort of thing. And the family has a family camp out in Mount Vernon, so I actually occasionally see the parents. I haven't seen any of my contemporaries in quite a while. Their daughter, Beth, for instance, lives in Colorado, and I haven't seen her in quite a long time. But when I saw that her parents were calling me in November, not in the summer when they're in Maine, I knew that it was not going to be good, unless, of course, it was an accidental calling. So when Beth's mother got on the phone, she shared with me the very, very sad news that Beth's son, who was the same age as Margaret, her only child, had passed away. And that the mother wanted me to reach out to Beth, who was really, of course, and understandably struggling a great deal with the sudden death of her son. Now, I hadn't talked to Beth in years, a long, long time. I remember at some point she was here visiting in Maine when Margaret was really small and her son and Margaret, we had this little play date for them. And I think that's probably the last time that I saw her. It was probably when Margaret was, I don't know, I don't even think John wasn't even around yet. So it was quite a long time ago. So it was a difficult phone call to make. And so Friday afternoon, found a quiet place and called her, and we had a very, very a good but an incredibly sad, very sad conversation. And so I finally hung up the phone with her, started, you know, putting things away and doing stuff in my house, and then the phone rang again, and this time it was Warren. Now, Warren, I don't necessarily assume it's going to be bad news, but of course Warren was calling to let me know that Bud had passed away. And so it was a rough afternoon. Was not expecting at all to get that news. And just to think, just last Sunday was sitting there, and we were remembering people who had passed away, and Bud had asked us to remember Barbara, his wife. It was a tough afternoon. And I know that in the past couple of weeks, there have been other deaths as well that have touched this community. It's been a difficult time. Death is sad, and it is difficult, no matter the circumstances. And when death comes, we are usually sort of ready to kind of, those of us who are a little bit on the outside, ready to sort of spring into action with a phone call, a card, offer our sympathy and our condolences, our friendship, our help, a listening ear, a shoulder to cry on, and of course, the always important food. Nothing like offering some food when somebody has died. For what else can you possibly do to offer something from the heart, to say something about how much you join the person in grieving? Death is a difficult and a tricky thing to contemplate, no matter the circumstances. And it's true for the circumstances of the early followers of Christ in Thessalonica. And the issue of death had made them afraid. It appears that someone has conveyed to Paul the Thessalonians' concern about those who had died, those who had fallen asleep, as it is spoken about in today's passage, before Christ's coming in victory. The Thessalonians' concern is not so much about the salvation of their loved ones as it is about community, about whether or not they will be eternally cut off from those they have loved simply on account of timing. The group of followers, the church of Thessalonica, was full of people who had become very much afraid. They had come to accept this new way, this new faith, this new way of being in the world, and they couldn't escape the human tendency to be afraid, to let fear get the best of them. Now, who knows precisely what they had come to believe and accept in terms of what would transpire once they became one in the faith? Would the promised return of Christ happen quickly? What if it didn't? Would the believers simply not die until that day? And if they did die, did that mean that their faith was somehow inadequate? But of course, Christ's return did not come quickly. Still hasn't. And the faithful have continued to fret and wonder about what all of this means, even to the point of developing an entire industry devoted to the subject, like the Left Behind series, all meant to scare people into getting on board with Christianity. Better be part of the church or really bad things are going to happen to you, especially after you die. It's simply not the case, though, that the Bible is at all clear about any of this, because it isn't. But Paul is clear about the significance and the importance of community. We are called together to encourage one another. The journey of life is not easy, nor is it full of simple answers to complicated questions. So we are called together to encourage each other, to embrace the power of hope, and to live out the assurance of God's love for us and for all. Paul offered pastoral guidance to remind the believers of the importance of community. We haven't been called together only so that we can receive and accept the sure stamp of salvation. Paul reminded the early followers of the significance of being followers today and tomorrow, and of living out the faith, living out of hope, living out of love. And because we do, fear will not get the best of us, not even the fear of the end. We don't know exactly what God has in mind. We don't know the answers to life's most complicated questions. What we have is each other. And that is where our focus should be. Not on our fear, not on what we don't know. But that doesn't mean we ignore the reality, for we are mortal and we will die. The lesson and the challenge that speaks to us today is to accept the grace to see and to understand the world not through our fears, not through those aspects of life that are hard to understand, nor is it to seek out and devise simple answers to life's most complicated questions. The challenge and the lesson that speaks to us today is to accept the grace to see and understand the world in an entirely different way. The vision of Christ's triumph that Paul develops in our passage this morning is one in which heaven and earth are suddenly and beautifully reconciled in an embrace, caught up together, Paul says, that takes place in a newly opened space between heaven and earth, in the air, as the verse refers to it now in English, and which will never end. What Paul is seeking to do in the passage on which we focus this morning is to help us to see with new eyes and to invite us to trust, not to fear, but to trust. To trust that the origins and ends of creation are in God and with God, and only with God, our Creator. That Jesus Christ is God's means for reconciling people to one another, to the creation and to God, that God will leave no one out who desires to be in right relationship, and that the transformational presence of Christ is known tangibly when believers actively engage with Christ in loving their neighbor. Christians live with faith in the goodness of God's purposes, with love for the people who come into their lives, and with hope, not a flimsy hope, not that kind of hope that's crocheted onto a cushion, but a sure and determined hope. It is hope and love that ought to drive our purpose, our mission, our understanding of what it means to gather and to follow, not fear. It is in living the Christian life of seeking right relationship with God and with others that believers in the first century and in the 21st century have actual experience of Christ in, through, and among. So on this day, after a difficult week, we have an opportunity to place ourselves once again in God's hope and in God's love. Hope and love that no other human being can provide for us, but only our Creator, who loves us more than we can imagine. To trust and to know, to be God's people in community, encouraging each other not only in words, but in real presence, seeking to allow Christ to lead us, to guide us together. The best place for us to be today is here. And I don't necessarily mean in this particular building, inside these walls, but to be here with this community of God's people, to be here, to be with each other, to be God's people as we've been called to be. May God continue to bless us as God's community, as God's people, and as people who seek to follow Christ and to share with reckless abandon Christ's love and Christ's hope today and every day. Amen.